It is 1:05, and so we reconvene. And the next item, 18, is groundwater cleanup. All incorporation groundwater cleanup status update. So, Mr. Robertson, if you can introduce staff.
I sure can, yes. So, item 18 is an information item. Dean Thomas and Taya Tryon, our newest section manager. I don't know if I said that yet. Of the site cleanup program, we'll provide an update on the Olin groundwater cleanup project. This has been one of our highest priority groundwater cleanup projects in the region.
Not quiet.
It says it has been.
No, I know, but not quiet.
This is a massive groundwater cleanup project in the northern part of our region that at its largest stretched more than 10 miles and affected hundreds of drinking water supply wells. Staff last provided you an update on this project 5 years ago. As a frame of reference in time, Dean has been project manager of this project since 2009, and Taya has worked on the project over the last 11 years. The Olin project has kept a really brisk pace for something of this scale throughout our collective involvement, and offers us a number of lessons. Lessons such as how we prioritize and deprioritize with our limited resources, how we manage conflict and still make environmental progress, and how we deal with large drinking water impairment issues. It serves as a model on a lot of different fronts that we can use organizationally. These lessons are portable and can be applied more broadly across the organization. This will happen in combination with the organizational restructuring that we are in the midst of, and we will continue to update the board on both the Olin project and our restructuring. Now, Taya and Dean will provide us an overview of the Olin groundwater cleanup project, its significant progress, and the sense of how we manage our resources in the site cleanup program. And with that, I hand it over to Taya Tryon.
Thanks, John. Good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Taya Tryon, and I oversee the site cleanup program. And Dean Thomas and I are here today to give you an update on the Olin groundwater cleanup project. The Olin cleanup project is one of our highest priority sites in the site cleanup program, and at one point it was also one of the largest cleanups in the nation for perchlorate. So you're probably wondering who these two folks are up on the screen there. The lady on the left, her name is Swanee Edwards, and the gentleman on the right, his name is Bob Cerruti. And they're two lifelong members of the Perchlorate Community Advisory Group, otherwise known as PK, that the Water Board is a member of also. They are doing a toast right there for a memorial for Sylvia Hamilton, which some of you may remember. Sylvia was one of the key community leaders on this project. She helped the Water Board and work with the community and Olin in a very proactive, collaborative way instead of a combative class action lawsuit type of way. So these are two real people who we are protecting from drinking contaminated drinking water, consistent with the human right to water law. So before I begin to give you an update on the Olin project, I wanted to switch gears for a minute and give you a behind-the-scenes look at how this cleanup project fits in with our overall site cleanup program work. So we currently have 8.3 staff positions that are available to work on 131 active cleanup cases. And like so many programs that we have way more work than we have staff to work on them. So in 2007, we started a prioritization strategy, which would help us focus our limited staff resources on the most important work. And how we did this is we developed three main criteria for screening each single one of our cases in the site cleanup program. The first was determining what the risk to human health and the environment was. So, for example, there's four categories within that criteria. So a site like Olin, which has a lot of people exposed to drinking water above MCLs, they would be a high priority case consistent with the human right to water. And also those folks that have vapor intrusion issues and are breathing harmful air due to the soil and groundwater pollution. So they are ranked really high. Another criteria is the hydrogeologic and waste complexity. For the Olin case, it's a really large plume that spans over multiple aquifers, so that's going to take a lot more staff resources to investigate and review much more technically challenging information. So the more challenging that information, the higher the rank in terms of priority. And then we also considered public participation. To do outreach takes time, and to do proper outreach takes time. So a lot of board meetings takes a lot of staff resources, so that was ranked within that. So ranking all of our cases, we do it once a year, because it also gives us an opportunity to check out our performance on how we're doing in on each one of our cases, because the goal is to go from a high risk to a low risk priority, and eventually closure, which is the ultimate goal. So most of the staff or most of our time is spent on high and medium priority. So the next slide I'm going to show you kind of breaks down the world of the site cleanup program in terms of the rank or the priority. So here's a pie chart. It's kind of hard to see in this light, but here's the section of the high priority. 70% of our cases are high priority sites. And then this block in red are medium priority sites, and then there's low to very low priority sites. We currently have 0.5 positions assigned to reviewing these low and very low priority sites. So in general, not a lot of these sites are getting worked on right now. When we do work on some of these, you will eventually see them in the EO report as a closure under the site cleanup program closure table. So that's kind of the distribution of our sites right now. So there's a unique thing with a site cleanup program, because when we identify a responsible party, they are required to pay our time to work on their project. And it works out with overhead costs to approximately $200 an hour for each hour we spend on that site. So we track our time in each one of our cases, and the responsible parties are billed once a quarter. So with that in mind, we have a way of monitoring how many hours on what case we're working. So here's another pie chart that shows the hours worked. So you will see around 46% of our work is spent on high priority sites. And then if you combine these two, over 70% of our time is spent on the high and medium priority sites. So for perspective, so the Olin project is one high priority site. And currently Dean is spending about 30% of his time on just that one project. So the next slide where I'm going to show you is that the hours worked over the lifetime of a project changes. So I wanted to show you this figure. This shows the number of hours worked on the Olin project starting in 2000, when we first discovered perchlorate at the site, to 2015. So initially, there's no time spent because we were just first discovering, but it quickly ramped up as soon as we figured out how massive the pollution was. So at one point, between 2005 and 2007, a lot of investigation, a lot of reviews of technical reports, very interactive with the community, lots of public meetings, a lot of outreach, and the CAO was issued during that time frame too. So 3,000 or so hours were spent during that 3 years, which equates to about 2 full-time staff. Now, the responsible parties have a very different perspective in terms of the hours worked, because as you recall, I told you that they get billed for the time. So over the life of the project to date, Olin has spent over $4.6 million on just us overseeing this project, not alone the $55 to $60 million they actually spent on the actual work investigating and cleaning up this project. That's a lot of money. So now I want to switch gears again. I've kind of showed you this unique behind-the-scenes look at how we deal with this one project with our overall work. And now I want to switch gears and let's talk about the Olin project. But before I do that, I want to talk to you about, for those of you who are not familiar with perchlorate, what is perchlorate? So perchlorate can occur both naturally with very low concentrations, but the majority of the perchlorate that we see in our environment is due to the manufacturing, the storage, and testing of solid rocket propellant or explosives. And in the case for the Olin case, it's actually the manufacturing of road flares they did at their facility from 1956 to 1995. So perchlorate is very similar to nitrate. It's a salt. And when a salt comes into contact with water, it dissolves quickly. And once it reaches the groundwater, it will mobilize very quickly. And then the main exposure pathway for humans and animals is through ingestion of contaminated water. The current MCL, or maximum contaminant level, or drinking water standard for perchlorate is 6 parts per billion, or 6 micrograms per liter. So perchlorate was first discovered at this Olin site in 2000 through a due diligence investigation by a prospective purchaser. That's how we find out a lot of times about the phase ones is when we find out about the cases.
Can you tell me what the health effects are?
The health effects, it blocks the uptake of iodine, so it is a thyroid inhibitor, and it affects metabolism. There's many other, Parkinson's has been associated with it, but those are all still kind of newish research. Perchlorate has been used as a treatment for Graves' disease, and in the staff report, I have an attachment which includes the health effects, which has a whole paragraph on it. So now I'm going to jump to the actual plume and what it looks like in the next slide. This looked a lot better in our office. I don't know what's going on with this projector, but the Olin site is right here. There's a little blue square right here in the city of Morgan Hill. Gilroy, city of Gilroy, is down here, and the community of San Martin is here. The groundwater plume extended from, at one point, extended from Morgan Hill all the way to Gilroy, which Morgan Hill. I don't know who's familiar with Morgan Hill, but it's about a 30-minute drive south of San Jose, and it's in Santa Clara County. And if you love to shop, which I do, I like to shop, it's actually 3 exits north of the Gilroy Outlet. Like the ladies kind of relate to me with that one. So at one point, the plume extended from Morgan Hill to Gilroy, and it's about 9.5 miles. The plume expands 1.5 miles, and in some areas, it's over 500 feet deep. The more grayish areas is the part of the plume that's kind of hovering around the MCL, up and down around the MCL. But the majority of the mass remains within 1.5 miles down gradient of the site where the red, orangey, yellow color is. So all the little blue dots you see here are domestic wells that during the production of this figure, Olin was monitoring. However, at the beginning of the project in 2002, Olin, and with the help of the Santa Clara Valley Water District, went out and sampled 1,200 domestic wells in the area. And they found that over 800 of those wells had some kind of detection of perchlorate in it. And with the help of Santa Clara County, before they could actually figure out which wells were what concentration, they provided the community with replacement water in the form of bottled water. And then in 2004, the Water Board issued a cleanup and abatement order for replacement water. And we're still under that order today. And it's providing replacement water to all well users that have wells that exceed the MCL. And for the wells that have higher concentrations, above 7.9 micrograms per liter, they're required to put an ion exchange system on their actual well and maintain it. So the next figure I'm going to show you is going to show you how many wells exceeded the MCL over time. So on the y-axis, you'll see the number of wells, and on the x-axis, you'll see starting in 2004, ending in 2016. In 2004, there was 188 wells that exceeded the MCL for perchlorate. Currently, there's 6 wells that exceed the MCL for perchlorate, and they're within 1.5 miles of the site. Now, the reason why this declining trend occurred is because Olin has done a really great job of doing effective remediation. By 2004, they had an on-site groundwater pump and treat system in place that prevented contaminated groundwater from leaving the site further down gradient. By 2006, they had an effective soil remediation such that perchlorate was no longer found in soil beneath the site. And by 2012, they had a massive off-site extraction system in place and operating to deal with that plume core that we call it. The other thing that's really helped is because perchlorate is a salt, it actually attenuates very well. And the plume, that gray area of the plume, has pretty much dissipated, and Dean will talk more about that. But that, with the help of Mother Nature, it has acted very quickly in attenuating for the areas that are lower in concentration. So I want to hand the presentation over now to Dean Thomas, who's been technical lead on this case since 2009. He's been really instrumental in helping work with Olin to determine how to delineate the perchlorate and also how to implement effective remediation strategies.
Well, thank you for that introduction, Tia. Good afternoon, members of the board. My name is Dean Thomas, and I am an engineering geologist in the site cleanup program, and I've worked on the site for 7 years. My talk today focuses on aspects of the project that we are directing most of our attention to this year, namely refinements to the extraction and treatment system, the cleanup remedy for the groundwater for the intermediate aquifer. So I want to return to this slide to orient you to the site. In blue here, and Taylor did a good introduction to where it is in the August subbasin. Gilroy here, Morgan Hill here, 9.5 miles of plume. And this slide basically shows almost all of the Yaga subbasin. So zooming in on that blue area is the Olin site there in the upper left-hand corner. It's a 13-acre site. It's basically an open field right now, with the exception of the groundwater extraction treatment system up here in the corner on Tennant Avenue there, just west of US 101. An important feature is Maple Avenue here, where the off-site system resides. I'll show that in a minute. And Butterfield Avenue is that curved road. As Taya mentioned, it's a site location of preferred release. The biggest problem I've ever dealt with, probably one of the biggest problems in the country. The next slide introduces Olin's groundwater extraction treatment system in relation to the aquifer's target for hydraulic capture and cleanup of perchlorate in those aquifers. It's a block diagram, essentially extruded out of the area in here and looking towards the east, northeast of the sedimentary units in the basin that are targeted. Well, the colors are quite a bit different. And here's a conceptual model of the site area relative to the three primary aquifer units. Described labels here on the right. In addition to the site area, and also included in this, show the treatment system here, and the off-site extraction wells on Maple Avenue. Groundwater essentially moves from left to right in this figure. And so the three aquifer units that we're dealing with is the shallow aquifer, intermediate aquifer, and the deep aquifer. And in relation to the plumes in blue, I feel really good, but these aquifers are predominantly sands and gravels with some cobbles that probably make some good river rock for your garden. They're fairly permeable and they're separated by certain clay units up to 30 feet thick that impede the groundwater flow both vertically and laterally through the system. The named aquitard here, the silt and clay, is an important unit. Recent investigations by Owen have found that there's a significant amount of perchlorate within the collop and the silts and the clays right in and around the site. And those are acting as kind of secondary source of perchlorate feeding it. Intermediate aquifer here. And those recent investigations have determined there's about 400 pounds of perchlorate left in that unit. And then these three primary aquifers are also subdivided, the intermediate and deep aquifer are also subdivided into three subunits each, and I don't show those here. Just to give you an example, an idea of how complicated this system is. So in all, there's seven aquifer units in the aquitard that we track for changes in groundwater levels, groundwater flow directions, and perchlorate concentrations in all its semi-annual reports. The on-site and two off-site extraction wells are shown here. And it's directed by Owen's cleanup and abatement order, the active extraction these wells are performed. They target concentration of perchlorate in the intermediate aquifer. They're required to clean up perchlorate above two times the MCL, the maximum containment level, and then in the deep aquifer, about four times the maximum containment level. The deeper aquifer, a little higher concentrations because the majority of the domestic wells tap that intermediate aquifer. And it's an important aquifer to clean up, protect the users of the water in the basin. So also, the CA allows for outside of those areas in the plume for monitor attenuation under a monitor attenuation program that allows for the dilution dispersion to knock the perchloric concentrations down. And I should mention here that shallow aquifer here that extends from down to about 50 feet is, see, the sand you cleaned up, that used to be fairly impact, and that actually fed into that cleanse silt unit that's been cleaned up by the on-site extraction well and social removal on-site. So there's good success there. So it's no longer feeding the deeper units. I should mention that in addition to moving laterally, there's significant pressure gradients at depth, so there's forcing the groundwater to move downward. So the treated water is reinjected on site into that shallow aquifer after where it can be reused. It also helps to push the perchloric to do the extractionals through the aviotar. So we needed the talk focuses on the perchloric plume and the intermediate aquifer, how the cleanup is progressing, and actions planned this year for improving the system. Most of the domestic wells, as I previously mentioned, tap the supporting aquifer in the basin. So back to this plan view diagram, aerial view. It's difficult to see with the colors here, but it has the extraction system infrastructure on place here. So to scale, then you can see the on-site extraction well and the two off-site extraction wells along Maple Avenue. And they're located about 3/4 mile down right into the site. And a buried pipeline that carries the extracted water back to the treatment system here in the corner where it's passed through the ion exchange resins in series and re-injected back in the basin. There are 6 injection wells. I don't know if you can see them there. Now, this system has been operating very well since 2004 and after the upgrades to the offsite system, as Ted mentioned. Nearly 100% uptime, which is amazing for groundwater pump and treat systems. Owing to, I think, the groundwater quality is really good in this basin from a general groundwater quality standpoint. But however, with the recent rains, all those technicians have scrambled to keep it running because their offset wells have flooded, and so they had to turn it off for a couple of days, but they got it back online, so fairly quickly. The other interesting factor is that a lot of these treatment systems, when you go to re-inject, it's hard to keep those injection wells clean and running. Soap often builds up in the filter pack, or you have carbonates precipitating. Owen has never had to redevelop the wells, but last week I got a call and they said now they're starting to show some mounting, so they're going to go back out and rehabilitate those wells. But that's quite a track record since 2004. That's pretty low maintenance. So in addition to this infrastructure, there are over 300 monitoring wells, most of them located within a couple miles of the site, but they're also distributed throughout the basin all the way down to Gilroy. So this slide shows the current plume in the intermediate aquifer. And there's the site for reference, Maple Avenue here. The on-site extraction well is actually right here, and the off-site extraction well is right here. The horizontal slice through the aquifer and its perchloric concentration about 80 to 90 feet below the ground surface. I know it's a busy figure, but the important features are the colored zones within the water. Internally, this area is we term the plume core area. The plume core extends about a mile down the river past Maple Avenue. The perchloric zones divide the plume into units by perchloric concentration range. This was yellow, it's still kind of a green yellow, but that represents concentrations above the drinking water standard of 6 and up to about 2 times the drinking water standard. And the darker the range here, between 2 times the drinking water standard, 4 times the drinking water standard, and red above the drinking water standard. So the concentration on site now maximum about 590 micrograms per liter, and directly off site they drop down below 100. So as you might imagine, based on the geometry of this plume, the groundwater flows towards the southeast, towards the bottom right-hand corner. The drought has challenged the system. It started coming on in earnest just as that offsite system was put in play. The owners had to lower their pumps a couple times to maintain flows. And it also, seasonally, you get a gradient that's towards the east, towards the right-hand side of the slide, as opposed to the southeast. So, it has caused gradient to shift seasonally to the east, potentially limiting offsite well's ability to capture the plume fully in a seasonal basis. I'll later discuss plume improvements to address the capture problem issue and that residual perchloria I talked about in that AD aquitard as previously mentioned. Before I do that, I'll show this time series illustrating cleanup on an intermediate aquifer downgrading of the site. So this is the same plume map you've seen previously. This is 2007 intermediate aquifer. See Eagle Rose here, Morgan Hill here in the plume core area. And as you can see, there are many domestic wells above 6 micrograms per liter, as indicated by the dots within the yellow areas. By 2010, the concentrations have dropped below the drinking water standard, so these areas are safe to drink the water. The gray areas are concentrations 2, 4, and 6. And you see there are some dots within the gray areas here. So they're still detectable above 4. In 2013, you can't see them. There are a couple that are above 4, but by and large, all the ones have cleared below 4. And then by 2016, the last reporting, it's essentially all the remaining monitored wells are below 4 on average. So, quite successful. It's just great that this large of a plume has cleaned up so quickly, and the users of the basin now don't have their water impacted by perchlorate. So next slide, I'm going to zoom back, or go back to the site, a little closer view of the site. There's a biofilm road and maples down here, the off-site extraction well is here, and the on-site extraction well is here. And so this is the proposed extraction wells for the enhanced heredity. So I've shown cleanup success downgrade of the plume core and the intermediate aquifer. Now, how is the cleanup progressing in the plume core area? Overall, the concentrations are declining, but it's slow rate, particularly near that impacted clay layer I talked about, the AB aquitard, as mentioned previously. All these recent investigations have delineated a significant residual mass in that 30-foot aquitard in and around the site. Basically, this slide shows the upper intermediate aquifer zone of the aquitard with a high concentration. It's basically above this, in terms of this is 80, 90 feet, and aquitard is directly above it from 50 to 80 feet deep. I mentioned the drought is seasonally the gradient direction more easterly, specifically the first quarter of the year. And that the offset extraction levels really need to play it. Fairly low concentration, so its efficiency is really low. It's played about 8.5 micrograms per liter as opposed to, you know, the drinking water standard being 6. So considering these factors, staff require only to conduct a feasibility study to evaluate whether there's a better means of capturing clinical perchlorate in this unit in the clinical area. Subsequently submitted the study and it evaluated bioremediation in addition to different extraction scenarios to handle it. Staff have only researched the possibility of using bioremediation to treat perchlorate in the aquaturb because it has the potential of speeding up the cleanup. So if you can do an in-situ treatment of perchlorate and not have to wait for it to move through that clay, you could potentially speed up the cleanup. But the study is such a big footprint, it would take 10 years of solid drilling every day to do these borings on 10-foot centers down to 80 feet. And the cost was significantly higher, more than double. So, considering these factors, staff approved plans proposed remediation here, remedy enhancements. Essentially a phase three, if you will, of the extraction treatment system, consisting of 5 new extraction wells in the upper intermediate right below the ABR, which are to capture as a moves through that unit vertically. Groundwater in really tight units basically moves under gravity straight down generally until it hits a premium unit where it can move laterally. So you place these wells right below that, just like cups, to try to get the mass before it can move away or down. So, and these wells are modeled to run at between 10 and 20 gallons a minute each, and promise to be much more efficient, use a lot less energy to remove mass much more effectively, and also handle out seasons, including potential future drought conditions. If we're not out of the drought yet, it's a very robust system. So only scheduled to get break ground on this year, and so we're very excited to get that going and see the results as it scheduled to get online probably late or early next year. So with that, I'll turn it over to Taylor to wrap it up.
So in conclusion, to wrap it up, I've worked on a lot of cleanup sites through my consulting days and now at the Water Board, and this is actually, considering the scale of the pollution, I would say that this one has been the most successful one I've worked on, and also the fastest. And I think I wanted to talk to you about what I think attributed to the success of this project and some of the key factors. And the first one is that as soon as Owen figured out that their site had contamination, they took responsibility right away. We didn't have to fight them on it. And they had the funds available to conduct a very, very expensive cleanup and investigation and provide replacement water. And the fact is that they also are the one responsible party we had to deal with instead of multiple responsible parties. As soon as you get more than one RP in the room, it slows down progress. And then, like, the fact that they did not hesitate to provide replacement water right at the beginning when it was first discovered, it really helped people feel better about that they didn't have to pay for bottled water and that they were not being exposed. And that program is still in place today, and it's been very successful. And then Owen was also able to hire the most highly technical consultants. And they themselves are very technical and very engaged in the day-to-day process of how this project is run, because it's their money that they're spending, and they have a board to answer to also. And then we also assigned our most technical staff on this project, too, to make sure that we're reviewing the information, because it's very technical. And then Olin's very effective cleanup strategy. By 2004, they had an on-site ground pump and treat system in place to prevent further pollution. Cleanup of the soil was in 2006, and then a really big off-site extraction system started in 2012. In 2017, we're going to see a whole bunch of new, more wells to increase the time it takes to clean up the red part of the plume. And because salt, perchlorate is a salt, natural attenuation really helped in reducing the distal ends of the plume, and it continues to do so. And then last but not least, we did some really excellent outreach to the community and to local agencies such as the City of Morgan Hills, Santa Clara Valley Water District, San Martin Water District, and sometimes it was kind of contentious, and but we persevered, and it was really important to build trust with the community and the agencies, and to build on that collaborative working relationship. And I think that's why this project is successful, and I'm probably going to be on this project for another decade, because similar to plume, but it's going really well and faster than any of us can expect. So we have to take on any questions.
So if I could add one observation and then ask Taya a question. The observation I would add, and it's inherent in Taya's last slide, but the focus of our dialogue was always around technical issues. It wasn't liability-based discussion. It wasn't about our authority to require something, and you can see where I'm going here. It wasn't about legal issues. It was about getting the groundwater cleaned up. There's a hard focus on making progress and making Olin's money make progress for Olin, rather than talk about, you know, if we have the authority to do something or how can we minimize how we communicate what's going on out there. The obsession with having it, the discussion focus on technical issues was key here, I think. And I think you would echo that. I was going to ask you, Taya, what's the timeline towards groundwater cleanup here? And I know that varies with respect to the different aquifer zones.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's difficult to say. I mean, it's projecting to be 200 years in the intermediate aquifer, but it's in a smaller area than what we originally thought. The key thing is remember Dean talked about the perchlorate's kind of stuck in that tight zone. And you can't speed that up. It's going to come out slowly. And that's why these new extraction wells are going to be put in place, because they're basically going to capture all that water with the perchlorate leaking out of the fine-grained soil so it doesn't go further into the aquifer. And that's going to be around for a long time. But the key is that people are going to continue to have replacement water. Right now there's only six, I don't mean only, but there's six wells that have exceedances. And so the project's going to be ongoing. It's going to take a lot of years. But I think what we're going to see once these new wells are going to start up, I think we're going to get a better picture of really how long it will take, because right now it's just modeled, predicted. And the distal end of the plume cleaned up a lot quicker than we originally thought.
Mayor Delgado?
Yeah, you mentioned attenuation of perchlorate. What's the process of attenuation? What happens to it?
Solution, mixing of clean water with the contaminated water to drop down the concentration.
Okay. So it's not converting to anything else. It just is diluting. Okay. And Dean, I think you mentioned 400 pounds of perchlorate remain. What's the target weight at the end of the remediation?
The target weight?
Yeah. Well, there was a 400-pound weight.
Well, the one important fact that he hasn't said was that they've removed 220 pounds so far. But they had to extract 1 billion gallons of water to do so. And 1 billion gallons of water is equivalent to 1,500 Olympic-sized swimming pools, or before the rains, about a fifth of Lake Kachuma. So that's a lot of water to move around to remove 220 pounds of perchlorate.
Yes, but you're going to be, with your five wells, removing 144,000 gallons per day. I just did the math. 20 gallon a minute, five wells,
24/7. So that's 145,000 gallons a day. So
it's going to be a lot
pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So is there an expectation or an estimate of how many pounds will be existing when it's considered done?
A lot still, but it won't be mobile at that point. I never give you a number when it comes to mass in the subsurface. It's pretty much impossible to estimate.
Okay. How does it percolate through the aquitards?
So say you had a bathtub and you put a giant sponge in the middle. So there's some water above, and then there's a sponge, and then there's water below. And then you add a bunch of red dye where the tap is, and it starts filtering. And then it starts filtering down just through the drive that there's water and weight on top, pushing the chemical down through the sponge into the lower part. So it's gradient driven, going from a high pressure to a lower pressure. Because the natural flow direction in the basin is downward.
Right, so it just concerns me that things can move through the aquitards, because when we talk about confinement, there's a concept in my mind that there's not mixing between aquifers with an aquitard between them.
Sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. It depends on the chemical, too. So something like TCE, it sticks to soil particles, so it doesn't really move readily through the tighter soils. Perchlorate is a salt, so it's more readily going to move because it's not attached to the soil particles. And it all depends on the system. Like, is there a higher pressure above? A lot of times with the natural groundwater flow, it goes from horizontally, not vertically. So most of it, 90% of it goes horizontally, 10% of it goes vertically.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Mr. Johnson?
So a couple of questions. You talked some at the start about your prioritization system in general for the cleanup programs,
mm-hmm.
and that your goal is to move different cleanups from high down. Should I assume that given the complexity of this, that this is still high?
This is still high, one of the highest, yes.
Okay. And I may have misunderstood when Dean was talking. I thought he said that the target was twice the MCL in the intermediate and four times the MCL in the deep.
No, the target for this entire cleanup is background.
Okay, so the target is background.
Background. But for the active remediation and what's required in our cleanup and abatement order is that we actively remediate everything above 11 parts per billion, which is about two times the MCL. The rest will attenuate. So when you do this feasibility evaluation, it was reasonable for them to just actively remediate, which is where the costs are, because you're moving water and you're extracting and you're cleaning it up. That's that stuff that was two times the MCL, and let the rest attenuate, because it makes no difference in time in terms of how fast it gets cleaned up.
Okay. And then you're saying that it could be 200 years before the deep aquifer gets to our target.
I was talking about the intermediate aquifer. The lower deep is going to be longer because it's tighter.
Does that mean theoretically, 100 years from now, Olin is still going to be required to be operating those pumps?
Possibly, yeah.
So
this is a long-term solution.
Okay, so as far as from our perspective, that this is going into the indefinite future.
Yeah, until we start gathering more information. I mean, we've been really surprised how quickly this form is cleaned up just with attenuation, natural attenuation from Mother Nature. So we just have to keep preventing the hot stuff from moving further away and keeping it contained and cleaning that up and letting Mother Nature take care of the rest. And I think as we go a little further, adding these additional extraction wells, I think we're going to get a better idea how quickly it's going to happen. But it's not going to be anytime soon, not with this scale of pollution.
Thank you.
Thanks. So just quickly, it almost sounds like as time goes by, because of where the contaminants are embedded, the timeline for cleanup becomes extended. Because you had mentioned it took 1.5 billion gallon to get to where we are at, right?
A billion. Mm-hmm.
Okay, a billion. So it's actually 20 years to get a billion with your five wells at 20 gallon a minute.
Well, not necessarily, because it depends on where it's extracting, where the source is.
Yeah, and that's my point exactly, is that when we compare to the past, it was relatively fast. But it almost sounds like if you were trying to plot this as a graph, it's going to be, slower and slower in order to further reduce these plume size. So I guess I'm saying the same thing is going to take a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But considering 200 years from now, it is very unlikely any of us will be on this board. Although, I'm going to live at least 100 years, so I got a ways to go. Antioxidants, yeah, that's my code word. active ingredient. But how then, on a case like this, we basically set a cleanup program for such a long period. I'm thinking about the mechanism, all in may not be maybe acquired by another company, a lot of change. So just briefly, because I don't want to take everybody's time, but what's the mechanism to allow, I'll call it multi-generational?
Right now, it's the cleanup and abatement order. And when someone takes on the property, they're going to be responsible, because in accordance with the water code,
mm-hmm.
all former and current operators and property owners are responsible parties. So they automatically become a responsible party when they buy this property, and they take over the responsibility of the CAO.
Okay. All right. Well, it certainly is one way to get job security, looking 200 years. But no, Preston, I think the good news here is a lot of progress has been made. And I'm sure, the folks who own these properties, they're properly valued at the time, was significantly impacted. When, in full disclosure, you have to say, well, my wells are contaminated, and so there has to be a tremendous relief from the owners, and hence why your very first slide had two smiling faces there in front of the monument. So thank you.
So if I can add just a little bit to this. I want to throw accolades to both Dean and Taya. So one thing that Taya talked about, prioritization within the program, she also did collectively the team did prioritization within the project itself. So they focused first on protecting human health. And we had that discussion yesterday about our organizational priorities. They reflect those as they prioritized within the project. They focused on the zone that the domestic wells were screened in. Now, the latter portion of the project, and that which we're talking about taking longer, like the deep zone, isn't used as heavily. There's a small amount of usage, not close. But the emphasis on the early part of the project was to protect human health and deal with the zones to the extent possible that would restore that large number of domestic wells to safe drinking water levels.
Thank you. And, I was driving with John, and I think it was coming back from Sacramento. And, we're driving around the highway there, and all of a sudden, John got all of a sudden, look, jump here, look, that's the site, that's the cleanup site. We're doing wonderful things there. He got totally excited, proud of saying, hey, that's where we're doing the work. So when we were planning the agenda, so it's not the site where you get all excited. He said, yeah, absolutely. So.
My kids tease me because, as soon as we get to go, I, oh, this is Mom's site. Oh, we're driving over the plume. And, oh, it's my hill. It's finally over. They tease me a lot when we drive there. So.
All right. Well, I think this was an item that ends with a positive note and hope for the future. So
I wish they were all like this.
Thank you. So our next, and I know we didn't have any further question from Karina, so I'd like to move